Russian troops are making a conservative push in eastern Ukraine and have gained a foothold in the strategic hub of Pokrovsk, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said. Moscow's soldiers outnumber Kiev 8-1 in the area, and Ukraine cannot match that, Zelensky added, while insisting Russia has not yet achieved its result. Who cares if they have received it on that day? When you have an 8-1 disadvantage, this stage of the war, when everybody in the world is focused on trying to get the manpower back up there and you haven't been able to succeed it, that should tell you something. That should tell you you cannot make this work out. Now, yesterday, the Atlantic Council published another report, which is even more damning. That was an 8-1 in Pokrovsk. This one here says that Russia's advantage on Pokrovsk exposes Ukraine's growing manpower crisis across the board. After 3.5 years of heroic and exceptionally bloody resistance, the fear is that Ukraine may now be approaching the point to where the country no longer has enough fighters to effectively defend the full length of the front lines in Europe's largest war since World War II. Based on the current trajectory of the war, this is vital, Russia's manpower advantage over Ukraine will only grow wider during the coming year. So you can see that it's not going to matter how heroic and how much vitriol you want to heap on the Russians, how much you want to say that they're awful and they're evil and all that, and how brave our side is fighting, and how we're going to keep on, we're not going to give up being the West, and we're going to keep giving you bullets and bombs and drones and all kinds of other ammunition. But you see now, as graphic as it can be, something I have been just screaming into this camera for so long. It's not about money or machines, as important as they are. It's about manpower. If you don't have the manpower, it doesn't matter how much ammunition you have. It doesn't matter if you have F-16 fighters. It doesn't matter if you have long-range missiles, ATACMs, or even if you've got the Tomahawk cruise missiles. None of that will matter if you don't have the troops to be able to hold on. I have told you many times, and now it's just being graphically depicted in such sharp relief, that you, even if you have a bunch of drones, even if you have 3 million drones that you can produce in a 12-month period, that's helpful, but a drone doesn't take or hold ground. You have to have men, and you see that now as crystal clear depicted as it can possibly be in Pokrovsk. Because even though Ukraine has a lot of ammunition and they're also inflicting casualties on the Russian side, they don't have enough men by an 8-1 margin. So it doesn't matter how many drones they may have because they don't have the troops that can defend. So they're continuing to lose ground. And this is happening all over the front. Let me just show you here. That was Pokrovsk we've displayed here. Let me show you what else is going on here. Let's first of all look a little bit south of here. This is another one of the things I've told you about before, and now I'm going to give you an update here. You may recall that this summer, the Ukraine side launched a counteroffensive and a counterattack, rather, and they took this whole swath here. This area that's now in red was in the blue of the Ukraine side because they pushed the Russians back quite a long way. But I told you, at the time, they didn't have the striking power and the sustainment ability to be able to do anything with that. And now it is graphically played out. The Russians over time retook every bit of the territory. And now then you see they actually went beyond that into the next, I think that this is Dnepropetrovsk area, but they went into another of the oblast there. And now then they've continued to push even deeper. In the last 12 hours, they've actually added this additional forward movement here in Novopavlivka. They're up in the direction of that. So now then that city is now about to come under threat. So that's in the south. Then we go past up Pokrovsk here, and we go to Konstantinivka. We've been mentioning this here. Russians are also on the move here. Again, this is just in the last 12 hours. They're continued to take some of the territory and the forced areas below, and now they are into the south part of the city itself, and they have continued to move up into that area. Then we go up into Seversk, which is one of the other areas that one of the recent ones where they've been going. This is something that Russians also been trying to get for quite a long time. And there's a number of Ukrainian troops that are defending in this area. The Russians are making more and more progress on the south part of the city. And then again, here in the north part of that. So again, it looks like they're trying to do that same tactic that is working all across the front, bring wherever the Ukraine troops are in the defense into a pincer movement. and cut off their routes of supply and get into fire control, all the routes that lead into it that keeps these guys supplied with food, ammunition, water, et cetera, and reinforcements, and keep that under fire control so that it makes it difficult and then continue to move into this area behind it. And then just like what's going on in Pokrovsk, just like what happened in Bakhmut, just what happened in Avdiivka, just what happened in Kursk, they end up shutting the whole thing off and then destroying everybody inside of it, especially if they don't withdraw. Then the other biggest one here is in, and you see stuff is happening all along the front, but then the other big one that everybody's talking about is in the Kupiansk. And you see, again, more territory in the heart of the city has been taken by the Russian side. And that leaves fewer and fewer. And this, a lot of this is forested area. The actual city, you see, there's not that much of it left up here in the heart of Kupiansk. And it's not going to be long before that falls, or the Ukraine has to withdraw from that into the forest area. But you see, they got nowhere to go here. So they're almost the only place they can go is to try and get back up out of here, if they're allowed to do that. There's been so many cases to where the Ukrainian side has not even been allowed to withdraw. I mean, that's happened so many times. I've mentioned that in, I think, one of our last tactical updates here. But basically, the Ukraine command is just sending their men to death. I mean, you see that kid that Gary showed a second ago. I mean, he said, we don't even know what we're doing. All I know is that hundreds of my fellow soldiers have been killed and wounded, and some of us are still alive, but we don't even know what's going on. So why are we even here? He's rightfully asking. Listen, it is a mark of pride and admiration that the Ukraine men have fought so incredible and courageously in such bad conditions as they have been doing for the duration of this war. But don't just pat them on the back and say, what a great thing. You're so heroic. We admire you. That doesn't do any good to a dead man. That doesn't do any good to the children who will no longer have a father, or the women who will no longer have a husband, or parents who will no longer have their sons. That, don't make yourself feel good by saying, great, what a super job you guys are doing, and send more of them to their death, and say, yeah, give them some more bullets, give them some more artillery, whatever they need, just send it to them as they die pointlessly. Listen, look at the numbers that Zelensky himself has exposed, that Sersky himself has talked about. They don't have enough. The Atlantic Council, believe me, there's almost nobody that's more pro-war than these guys are, and they're definitely pro-Ukraine, and yet they're exposing it and being honest at this point and saying that the disparity will only grow. Why do you want to take someone who's that heroic and that brave and send more of them to unnecessary and permanent death? Yeah, and you're destroying Ukraine by patting them on the back. This is what the West is doing. I'd say euphemistically, the Western leaders, the White House, Whitehall, Champs-Élysées, all these folks, Berlin, you guys think you're doing a good job. You're doing a terrible thing. You are enabling Russia to completely destroy Ukraine and to wipe out their troops. That's their objective. That's why Russia continues to say, Sergei Lavrov has said, Vladimir Putin has said, we are willing to end this war today. If you'll take these ugly terms, and they're ugly, don't put lipstick on it. They're terrible. It denazification. So the government's going to have to change. Demilitarization, you're going to have to shrink down. There's not going to be any NATO. There's not going to be any security guarantees at all. But if you get rid of all those things, the war will stop and Russia will have reason to stop. There is motivation for Russia not to conquer any more of Ukraine. There is. So this myth that, oh, well, they just want to conquer all of it and then they want to go west is complete fiction. There's no truth to it whatsoever. And it's graphically depicted. There's reasons, specific reasons why. Not just what they say, but the fact that their armed forces, what they have, is not enough to complete that task. And it doesn't take much common sense to see that they would never want to conquer Western Ukraine, because they know that that would be getting basically an insurgency guaranteed indefinitely. And nobody wants that in the Russian, and they don't need any of it. They want security on their borders. That's what they've said, and that's what an honest evaluation would show. So stop sending Ukraine men to their pointless deaths. Let's get this war over with and stop making yourselves feel better by sending more Ukrainian men to a pointless and unnecessary and certain death. Because listen to me, that saying there from the Atlantic Council, that is probably prophetic. If you don't do what I suggest, and if you keep doing what you've been doing, Herr Metz, Mr. Starmer, Macron, if you guys keep doing what you're doing, you will be signing the death warrant for Ukraine, men and the country, because Russia will eventually, because you're not going to leave them any choice, as Alistair Crook said on our show just yesterday, the only choice left to Russia will be continued methodical military forces. And if they don't have enough to even continue on, and again, you saw that the one of the editors of the Times in London said he doesn't think that Kiev will be standing sometime this spring, this coming spring. So listen to what these people are saying, because by continuing on your path, the easy path, the one that doesn't take any hard decisions, you could cost the entire country. And then Russia, whether they want to or not, they may have to take the whole thing and then have to deal with it. I don't know. Maybe that's part of your plan. Maybe you want Russia to have to do that because you're okay with all of the Ukrainian armed forces being killed and then, you know, keeping a thorn in the Russia side after that. I don't know. I guess I can't dismiss that possibility that that's actually okay with you. You don't care about people dying, but damn, come on. Ukraine people, you guys ought to recognize that. Don't let your country be dismembered to serve the pleasures of a handful of leaders in the western part of Ukraine, of Europe. That's horrible. That's awful. That's the truth, though, folks. That's what you need to know. Likely, Pokrovsk is going to fall possibly within days here because you could have a collapse at this point. You've seen the status of the Ukraine forces in there, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But the disparity is only going to increase, and probably the cities are going to start falling in more rapid fashion. We'll see how that's going to work out. Listen, let's go today. This is interesting here. This is a U.S. Marine live fire operations in the Caribbean Sea near Venezuela. And this is just a real troublesome thing to me because it just, and there's more combat power that's on the way into the Caribbean. And there is nothing that validates and justifies this use of military force. This claim, and you need to understand something. I know that the administration continues to say, oh, well, this is about drugs and this is about keeping our people safe. That's BS. Just strip that away. There's no truth to it at all. There's none. That's what they say because it sounds like plausible, and that's what they want. They want the American people to support it because they go, well, yeah, the drugs are a terrible thing. We have all these overdoses, and it's because of the drugs coming in, so let's go get them. As I've said, Venezuela is somewhere around 20th on the list. All these drug boats we've been blowing up, they don't even have the capacity to get to the United States. God only knows where these things are going, if they're drug boats at all, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest they're not. So it looks like we're just trying to paint this picture that makes people in America think that there's some threat that we're going to be stopping. And evidence refutes it resoundingly and strongly. There is not. And yet it looks like, and there was, I think it was Senator Scott. I can't remember exactly which one. One of the senators was on the television here just a few days ago and said, yeah, basically Maduro either walks away, sees all this combat power coming and just leaves, there's a coup, or he's going to be assassinated. But he's going to go one way or the other. That was astounding, an absolutely shocking statement by a sitting U.S. senator. We're not at war with Venezuela. They're not threatening war with us. There is no security threat at all from Venezuela. And yet here you're just categorically saying we're going to go kill the leader of an independent country in our own hemisphere, I guess because we don't like him. You can be more cynical and say because we want his oil, so we want to kill him and then install this other person here, this opposition figure that is very friendly to the United States and loves Donald Trump. And then, I don't know, then you think that we'll have full access to the oil on top of that, even though Maduro literally offered on a silver platter everything that we wanted because he does recognize the threat and the risk. But no, it seems like, no, we just want to kill him. So it's a bad situation, and it is troubling. We need to understand that. This is a grotesque violation of the United States Constitution and a direct violation of the 1973 War Powers Act, which expressly forbids the President of the United States from using the military to go and attack another country when there has not been a congressional authorization, when there has not been a declaration of war, or we have not been attacked. Those are the only three possibilities. in the 1973 War Powers Act. And I know Lindsey Graham has already been on TV talking about how it violated 130 times. So who cares if we violated 131? Understand the significance of that, his statement and these actions. We are not a country governed by the rule of law. It's black and white there for anyone to see who's willing to. And for those who say, well, yeah, but he's a bad guy. Maduro's a bad guy. They say he didn't legally win his election. So, and he does a lot of bad things. And he may even been responsible for killing people in his own country. So who cares if he dies? If you get into a world where you're comfortable with might makes right, that it's the rule of law of the jungle, not the rule of law, it's only a matter of time until the authorities get real comfortable just ignoring law as they see fit. And then one of these days, they're going to ignore some laws that you don't want to see violated, that take your rights away, that take your freedom away. And in a worst case scenario, take our lives away. That is where this can go. And when we get comfortable, I'm telling you, listen to me carefully. When we're comfortable that we just say, I don't care what our laws say, this is what we can do, so we're going to. That is a really dark and dangerous place. And I think more and more people need to stand up and say, no, no more. Whatever he may have done, if he hasn't done, if there's no congressional declaration of war, if there's no evidence that we can see and validate independently that something has happened that can cross these thresholds, then no, we're not going to support that. That's what we better do, because one day, folks, we could be on the receiving end of that. A government that shreds the rule of law and doesn't even pretend to follow it, they will not stop there. Don't think that just because it's in South America that somehow that there's a difference between domestic and international. There's not. The mentality that says the law doesn't apply to me, no laws will apply to them. Anytime they can get away with it and do it, they will do so to their benefit. That's just human nature. That's just how it works. So this is a dangerous time at home as well. It's something we need to pay a lot more attention to. And we will definitely keep it on your radar here, because we are unintimidated and uncompromising. We will tell you the truth no matter what it is, no matter where it is. Thank you very much, folks. We appreciate you. And we will look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.